It's funny, it's when I least expect it. It's like a flash. My sister got married yesterday, and it was such a wonderful time to see everybody again. And all of a sudden, I mean, I wasn't talking to anybody in particular, I was just listening to the conversations. And all of a sudden, I was back in Africa, I was back in Kisese, I was back at the cholera center, I was back with the other people that, you know, that I worked with, and it was so real. And so I don't know how long I was in that trance, and then somebody just kind of, you know, repeated this, you know, they were trying to get my attention. Joelle? It was like,
Joelle!
Wow, yeah. That's right, I've got to get back into feeling happy here. And there was a part of me that was really quite sad, thinking of all the unfinished work that I've left behind. And the guilt, I mean, you know, just the abundance of everything, the abundance of food, the abundance of drinks, the abundance of happiness, all of that just seems a bit unfair.
Epidemic, an occurrence of disease that is temporarily of high prevalence.
With MSF, it's fairly simple. You pick up the phone and you call, they send you an application. I had a 1 week training, and then you have to be ready to leave at a moment's notice. I received the call on Friday and I left on Sunday morning.
Ladies and gentlemen, Air Canada now requires all passengers to keep their seatbelts fastened while seated in case of unforeseen turbulence.
So this is my diary, an audio diary. It all happened very, very quickly. I got a call from MSF informing me that there had been an epidemic of cholera in Uganda and that it was still not under control and they needed a nurse. So here I am.
Cholera, an acute bacterial infection of the small intestine caused by Vibrio cholerae. The disease usually starts with an abrupt purging diarrhea, soon followed by vomiting, and the patient rapidly becomes dehydrated. The skin becomes cold and withered. The blood pressure falls, and the pulse becomes faint. Muscular cramps may be severe, and thirst intense. As dehydration increases, the patient becomes comatose and may die in shock. With prompt fluid and salt repletion, recovery can be remarkably rapid. But if therapy is inadequate, the mortality rate is high.
So here I am, I'm in Uganda.
We are a team of three here, and we also have a driver by the name of Sandy. Anyway, the drive is anticipated to be approximately 6 to 7 hours to Kasese.
That 7 hours in the truck was special. I'm here, I'm in Africa, I'm with MSF. Doesn't get much better than this.
So now I'm going to pass you on to Saskia. And Saskia is from Amsterdam, and she's a physician, and here she is.
Well, this is my first project, so actually I'm not quite sure what will happen. I'm quite thrilled, a bit nervous as well, because it will be a tough job, I guess, what we're going to do.
I knew it was going to be a lot of work, and I knew this was going to be a time in my life where I was going to give instead of receive.
I will pass you now on to David. He is our logistician. He's from England.
Hi, I'm David. First mission for MSF.
The fact that we went with MSF, I don't think, makes us outstanding in any way. We were three very ordinary people who like to be challenged.
We're not out of Kampala at the moment, so to speak, but I think it's going to be a long journey. Okay.
Uganda. Population, 20 million. Life expectancy, 41 years. There is one doctor for every 25,000 people. Areas with poor sanitation and water supplies are most at risk for cholera. 62% of Ugandans lack access to clean water.
This is March 28th. Today I was in the field for the first time, and on our way to work, we were going to Kagando, where we have a cholera treatment center. And we came upon a crowd of people. You have to put things in context. It was really in the jungle, quite isolated. They asked us to stop. They were waving. And so we stopped the vehicle to see what the situation was. And there was a lady, a little old lady, who was unconscious, and she was hidden under the palm trees to try and keep her in the shade. Obviously, very dehydrated. We couldn't even find a peripheral pulse on her. Chances are she probably has cholera. I guess the adrenaline started really pumping. I mean, we knew that the situation was pretty critical. We had to get some fluids in her very quickly. It was a matter of probably an hour before she would pass away if we didn't respond quickly enough. So we proceeded to start an IV on her and then started a second one on the other arm so that we quickly could get the fluids back to an acceptable level. And then managed to put her in the truck. Whisked her away to the health center, which was approximately maybe an hour away. We felt pretty good once we got her in the center and settled in, and within an hour she was already starting to respond. I happened to be walking by her cot, and she turned around and followed me with her eyes. And an hour and a half earlier, she was almost dead. So, this was a close call, and so it really made my day. Oh, God. I woke up in the middle of the night to the sound of gunshots. I had earplugs in. At first, I wasn't sure. I thought maybe I dreamt this because of the earplugs. So I'm just laying in my bed under my mosquito net, and the window is right at the head of my bed. You know, in this old, dilapidated hotel, where the door's hardly locked and the windows didn't close, and I really felt quite vulnerable. Everyone is aware in the team that there's rebel activity going on in the north of Uganda, and there had been a massacre about half an hour from where we were 2 days previous. And I have visions of somebody putting a gun to my head. All of a sudden I hear the second bang, and the shooting was much closer. I mean, it felt like it was right next to me. I jumped out of bed at that point and went and knocked on my colleague's door, and she crawled in with me. And it was a very, very frightening experience. But that wasn't a regular occurrence. And with all the turmoil, I mean, from gunshots in the background and people crying and all the noises in the cholera center, there were times that I remember thinking, I have never been more at peace with myself. Feeling like I knew how to do the job and how to do it right. There's one lady, probably 8 months pregnant, and she lost her husband. She was my age. She was 35 years old. The two of us are sitting on a cement ledge in the cholera center, and her husband had been in one of the rooms. Now he's gone. He's been taken to the morgue. So she's just sitting there with me, and she's crying, and I can't give her any support, I'm feeling really helpless because she's beside herself. She's crying, she's singing and crying at the same time. It's one of those things that just, it grabs at your heart. I'm trying to hold her in my arms, but she's inconsolable, and you know, every now and again, I mean, she just kind of throws herself on me, and the tears are just, I mean, just like turning a tap on. After a couple of hours of this, I'm coming back and forth. I'm looking after her, and then I'm tending to some of the patients, and I know that I have work to do. I can't keep going back to her, but I can't help myself. There's just something about this lady. Maybe it's the eye contact. She kept looking at me as I'm looking after the other patients. She's crying and she's looking at me, and so I keep going back to her. After several hours, I realize that the whole center is being disrupted. I mean, everybody is just frantic. I think it makes everybody realize how vulnerable we all are. I mean, in any given moment, obviously anybody could die, because her husband had been talking 10 minutes before he died, and then all of a sudden, boom, he was dead. So for everybody listening to this lady, it just made it so much more real that it could happen to them. So then at one moment I knew that it was up to me to get her to leave the center. I mean, she has to leave, but I can't do it. I can't get her to leave. And I try to imagine what she must be feeling so that maybe I'll have the answers as to how I can get her to leave the premises. And then all of a sudden I start to cry. I mean, it's so unexpected. I really thought I was under control, and then I lost it. So then I get up and I leave, and I go in one of the rooms and try and gather myself up. Shortly thereafter, I got her to get up and we walked out together, and she was walking back home. Somebody had already taken her husband away, and so she had to walk home. So I walked her for probably 10-15 minutes. And then I turned around and went back to the center. So she finished her journey with the sister and maybe a brother-in-law. And I can still see her walking away, 8 months pregnant, walking away. She just lost her husband. She had no other children. Very sad. Very, very, very sad.
Abari, Muzuri. Okay.
Under these conditions, in the cholera center, it's very limited what we work with.
Came in cholera.
Yeah.
2 days ago, but yesterday had difficulty in breathing. So when I was examined, they found that he's having the cardiac failure, and we had to put the oxygen.
Okay.
Yeah.
He was unconscious when he got here.
Back home, if you went to the hospital, in some of the conditions that these people were coming to us in the cholera center, back home, they would be revived.
Can I take a look at his chart? Okay, unrecordable BP, so he was obviously in shock.
There were cases where I take one look at them and I knew that if I could only give them potassium, this person would live. Or if I had this medication on hand, this person would live. Or if we had the possibility of diagnosing with, you know, certain equipment, this person would live. If we had transportation, which we don't have, I mean, some of these cholera patients had to walk a whole day to get to us. Well, by the time they get to us, I mean, they're almost dead. At home, you call up the ambulance and the ambulance comes and picks you up.
Has a lot of pains.
A lot of pain in his chest?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, in terms of all the luxuries that we have in our Western world, we had nothing but the basics to work with.
Okay, Johnson.
For me, I'm ready.
Okay.
Yeah.
See you.
Go here. Okay.
I really didn't anticipate that I would be sad saying goodbye, and I guess I didn't anticipate also that people would be sad to see me leave.
Bye-bye.
Oh, when are you going?
In the next couple of days, I fly back to Canada.
Okay, this is safe journey to Canada.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
I was just one other MSF nurse.
Bye-bye.
But, you know, I felt like I was letting them down. It's almost like I was saying, this has been a great experience for me. I've taken all that I need here. And now I'm going to go back to my nice, cushy, comfortable life. I felt guilty. I felt like I was leaving them in a bind. And if I had a choice, I would have preferred to have... I don't know. I don't know how to say this. I needed to buy clothes, and I went to buy clothes when I got back, and I've never experienced this amount of guilt. I mean, I couldn't do it. I had to walk out of there. I thought, what am I doing getting back into my materialistic lifestyle when there's so much more I could do with this money? I mean, do I really need this job? Maybe I could just go back and dedicate my whole life at doing this kind of work. I mean, they're all thoughts. I mean, they may be only thoughts that last for a moment, but they're thoughts. And when they go through your mind, it just didn't seem fair that I'd leave them. Do you know what I mean?